Good morning, everyone. After the sitting this morning, Roshi asked me to do the talk today. I think I was dreading a little bit doing it. What came up when I was sitting just for the 10 minutes that we did just did is a story that I thought about couple of days ago, and that's always very inspiring to me, and about Dogen, when Dogen came back to Japan after spending years in China, and someone asked him, so what did you bring back from China after all these years of studying? He said, "I came back and I come back empty-handed." We've all spent over the past month, we've all experienced a very strange time being confined wherever we were. I was in the south of France by myself. Some of you know. We've shared meditation practices every day. And I was very much settled in a routine, working, writing, doing a little bit of jogging. And then I came back to Paris. I went back to interacting with real people. And I found myself being annoyed by every single thing. Every single interaction, every thing that I would do, just, it was annoying, so annoying to me. And I wasn't quite sure why. And just as I came out of my confinement, I had a discussion with Roshi, and she said, some of you know that she wanted to give me transmission next year. Which is a huge burden that is given to me. And And I come out and I'm annoyed by every single thing. And I'm like, what am I going to teach? Disappear. Can people hear me? Yeah. Yeah, and suddenly I had no idea. So we had that center running and the owner took it away from us and I was annoyed. And I wanted to I would have liked to continue and do the same thing again. And so I had ideas, plans. It turns out, I'm super grateful that we don't have that center anymore, because otherwise it would have been a huge financial mess up for us because of confinement. And we would have had to raise money and get money from somewhere, and with money we didn't have. And so I'm actually very lucky that, actually very happy that we don't have that center anymore. And we organized a different format in order for us to meet. So, it's always that experience that I have that things are changing unexpectedly. And also with this being annoyed is also that I could see also that I was in being annoyed, there's the experience of being attached to certain ideas and things, the way things should be happening. Over the past year, for me, a huge source of attachment or observation of my attachment has been is linked to the passing away of my mother a year ago, and I experience every single day how I'm attached to some aspect of that, which is not being able to meet her physically. Experiencing the loss, and with the loss, the pain that is linked to an attachment to a certain, to the loss of a certain form, a certain reality, a certain aspect of reality that is no longer accessible. And it tends to draw me into despair. And yet, again, because of the practice, there's also the possibility of seeing it, seeing how that works, seeing the functioning of that attachment, of me being annoyed, having the discipline or the training. Buddhism, I really like that expression of taming the mind. We tame the mind. I really like that taming. It means we become aware and we become friendly with it. And so, or we could say being intimate. But with the taming also, there's a notion of transformation. We transform something into something else, something that exists into something else, so that we have a different experience of it. So in all these situations, the pain linked with the loss, being annoyed, feeling the burden of what it means to receive transmission, the anxiety linked to this particular position, seeing that, and at the same time, and so seeing the process of how that works in me, in there. And what was mentioned yesterday and before yesterday about the vertical and the horizontal line, the peace that makes the connection between the two. Has something to do with the mindful awareness that we develop, the practice of mindful awareness that we develop. The framework that we use, that we embody in our practice. Our intentions, what we want to cultivate, and how we cultivate it. What exactly do we do in the sitting? And following a breath, working with koans, panoramic awareness, and because we could also, I say that often, we could also sit there and just following our thoughts and that we all falling asleep. We could do all kinds of things while sitting, thinking about what we're going to eat or the important things that we need to do, the checklist of all the things we need to do for the next 24 hours or a week, grand plans for the future. We could do all kinds of things while sitting. But we decide to cultivate mindful awareness. Our intention is to, or my intention is to live fully more aware, more connected, serve. And it is very clear to me that in that mindful awareness is specifically trained, or how can I say, we focus on that task very precisely while we are sitting together here, wherever we are sitting. And also that secular life that we live, our lay life that we live, give us endless possibilities also to experience that. And I would say even more, because when I was by myself in the south of France, living by myself, I didn't have many interactions, and so I didn't have any many possibilities in order for us to, for me to experience the rubbing with one another that creates tensions, that creates me being annoyed, or me annoying people also. So going out in the world and experience this also because of that training of mindful awareness. Gives also the possibility to see how that functioning occurs and opens up to something else, to a more fruitful experience, to a more ethical living, to a more joyful experience. And it's an endless task, because I think we all experience that however deep our practice is, we keep being caught up by the traps of our minds. And so it's such a relief to be able to have a practice, a discipline that where we can observe and let things get still, let our thoughts get settled and experience some kind of silence. Dogen came back empty-handed. He didn't come back with Maybe he came back with bags of sutras and all that, with books, literature. And, but he certainly got trained in emptying. Emptying himself, tapping into the silence in himself, so that things can be seen without being cluttered by a mind, a notion, so opinions. It's like instead of accumulating, it's we take away things. To the point really that we don't know. We don't know. I don't know what my next word is going to be. I don't know what I'm going to do with that transmission. I don't know. I don't know, and I let myself, I stay open to whatever arises. Even though it's painful, sometimes it's not necessarily painful. Being open to the joy is also something that can happen. One word that that speaks to me is also the word nuances, to be aware of the various subtleties of how things appear. It's never really the same, and I can really see that with this experience of grief that I go through. It's never the same. It has always a different flavor. It always says something different. And also I can see that sometimes it can be easy to make it as one uniform emotion or memory, but it's not. It always arises as something different than how it occurred previously. I feel that's the training. And I thought yesterday about how because we're to some extent all in confinement, some of us were alone, some of us were with our families or partners and family and all that. But it the sphere of our interactions suddenly get tremendously reduced. And I find it very strange now that what we experience in retreats by being together happens differently, and we can't be annoyed by if you are the cook, someone comes and says, you know, oh, please don't put this and this and that because I'm allergic to this and this. Or if you are in the position of being the Jikido, well, maybe that happens in your group in Portugal, if you're together, but why don't you do this and this instead of this, you know? Oh, the bell is too strong or whatever. All these things that allow us also to, in retreats, to that rubbing with one another that allows us to observe something about ourselves and learn something about ourselves. And that is happening less and less. And I would say it's even more important in these periods to practice that mindful awareness in order for us to stay in contact and to stay intimate. Because if we're by ourselves or with few people around, we just get into a habit and it gets things solidify more easily. So it's even more crucial to do it in these times. I think that's that's what I have to share for the moment. And I would be happy to hear if it resonates, if you have questions, comments, share experiences.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell us a bit more about what it means to receive transmission and how it is for you?
It's sort of What comes to mind is I received Dzogchen in 2000. I had been practicing already for a couple of years. And very early on, I knew I wanted to teach. What changed tremendously over the course of that, these years is, what does it mean? Why do I want to do it? And how I experience it. And I have to say it was it's obviously a very long process, also a very natural process, organic. Also, it feels like a very organic process. things are being recognized the moment where it's mature. And sometimes something comes to mind is like, well, I was waiting at some point for Roshi to tell me what to do. And she said, you know, take your role, whatever your role is. So I was looking for an acknowledgement or directions and acknowledgement. And so that was part also of the process. And suddenly there is something happened during confinement for me. I remember exactly. I spoke one Thursday night, I think, and some of you were present, and I said things, and I felt very. I didn't know exactly where I was going with this, but it felt very personal and very like I was expressing things in a way that I had never heard it myself. And I had the. And then I thought, oh, yeah, something happened, and she heard it also. So there was like this. There's this image that we use, like the bird that is inside the shell that tries to break the shell, and the teacher is on the other side, and then it suddenly happens. So it feels a little bit like this. And also it feels like a huge responsibility, huge burden. And it's very, how can I say? Humbling. It's very humbling. More than anything else. A huge sense of responsibility. Very humbling. And again, as I was saying before, also now I have to ask myself the question, what do I want to do with this? What form, what's the structure that I want to give? What's the shape of it? And it's really going back more than ever to the beginner's mind that we all practice. And I really feel like it pushes me in the place of a beginner's mind in a way that I have never really experienced myself, really not knowing at all, having no clue, and at the same time feeling, well, it's like there's a sense of responsibility of someone passes me the ball and I need to pass the ball to someone else, and that's the idea of the whole thing, that you receive it and then you transmit. And it's not about you, it's just about the ball, the Dharma. But in order for me to pass the ball, something needs to happen. Like you need to have people to send the ball to, you need the form that allows the people to receive the ball, it's like all kinds of conditions, and the job right now is like looking at not even the job right now, because that's going to happen in a year, but like the job that will need to be done at some point is finding the shape of it and being connected to my ideas, but also not being stuck with anything. So it's really just like bringing the beginner's mind alive at every moment. That's what it feels like. So that had a question. Can you explain the meaning of the vertical and horizontal line that you taught yesterday and today? So, well, that was Roshi that talked about it, but was that that notion, vertical is really the horizontal is really the just what we experience, just the daily life, and the horizontal is really just the presence. But what makes, Hugo asks, what makes transmission a burden to whom? Well, a burden in the sense that well, it's true that it's, well, suddenly a concept arises, like it's a burden, it's like it's heavy on me, because yeah, as I said, the you receive it and you have to pass it on to someone else, make it alive to everyone. And I found that responsibility is massive, teaching is being present and speaking in front of you. It's like, yeah, sometimes it's not easy. I really need to empty myself in order not even like dropping ideas about the fact that I hope that some of the words echo something in you, and that it's, and so it's useful, as it was, as some of my teacher's words were useful to me for my development. And we, I guess as a teacher, you want to be useful, but at the same time, that also needs to be dropped. That idea of being useful needs to be dropped. And it's very hard to if you think about Dogen or all the other people that you read, to think, oh my God, I come after these guys, and also drop that idea that, oh my God, what can I say after them that is going to be as useful, as smart, as eloquent, as, and okay, drop that too. And Seo asks, said, empty hands are also everything you have outside of these empty hands. Yeah. Yeah, Debbie?
Just on the subject of how useful Anthony May, it's been really useful to hear about your annoyance, Joa. Because the more I practice, the more annoyed I am, which doesn't seem logical, but it is that way. And it worries me, because I'm a volunteer with people even older than me, and they're really not attractive, not pleasant, not happy, not any of the things that I would like to be surrounded by. And it annoys me a lot. When I spent the afternoon with them yesterday thinking, oh, please let me be a nicer person. But the fact that what you also said about practice making it possible to see it. Actually, yesterday, because of Sunday's Roshi talking about looking at things differently, I wasn't as annoyed as I thought I was going to be. The head honcho canceled at the last minute, so I was the new leader, which I really didn't want to be. There were a lot of grouchy old ladies there, but this business of looking at things a little bit differently and accepting the fact that they annoy me, what can I say, makes it a lot easier. So as far as I'm concerned, you were a very good teacher today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. João Ferreira asks why receiving transmission, which is entitling, is also humbling rather than mainly entitling. Well, it has to do with the burden. The burden, and that makes it, I mean, again, like going, you know, coming after that, I'm going to have to, like we all did when we did Jukai, the lineage chart, and these names, and also the names that don't mention, that are not mentioned there, which is all the people that inspired me on the way, amazing, tremendous teachers. Surya Das, Stephen Batchelor, to name a few. There are people that really shaped me in on that, and you carry the robe for, and I don't know. It's just, for me, it's humbling. As always, it's also, it can be something that, I mean, I need to be careful also to observe what's behind the humbling. Is it, oh, I'm so worthless. Oh, I'm not gonna arrive at their level or something like that. And that can be a hindrance also. That can be my mind just doing another trick. And so that's also, something to that I look at. Did I respond to all the comments that were made in the chat?
It's funny because listening to you, it seems that the phrase turns on another way. It's not receiving transmission, just entering in the great transmission process. And this is very humbling.
Yeah, the process itself is, and as Roshi's said to me, it's also a process for her. It's and I'm so glad that it takes a year. It's gonna take us a year in order to go through that, because in itself, it's a huge process for both. And I see how things arises in my mind because just. She said that to me. Maybe Roshi, you want to comment on that?
On the fact that it's also a process for me?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a process for all of us. For Joa and for me and for the Sangha. For me, there is the process of letting go of, you know, almost as when you have a child who becomes independent, you have to let the child go and find his way. And not, you no longer have any, you've done what you can. My teacher said to me, when I discussed with her that I was planning to give Joa transmission, She said, yes, it's a recognition that you've taken the student as far as he can go, and he's ready to go his own way now. And I have, that's a process for me as well. Just on an individual basis of letting go of this student who I've been working with, who I've known since 1993. So I was not a teacher at the time, but we knew each other. We were students together. So that's a big process. It's also a responsibility for me, saying, okay, I am ready to acknowledge this person. I'm ready to recognize his path, his realization, his readiness to take this next step. It doesn't mean that his practice is finished. It's finished. It just means that he's ready to take on more of his own practice himself. And that's a big, for me, it was already, the process has already been going on before I even spoke to Joa, because I had to go through that process of myself and saying, is he ready? Is this the moment? What am I holding him back? And I think we've done it as best we could, given our circumstances within the context of our Sangha. I think we've managed it well. We've managed it in our way. In the way that I am a teacher, the way that he is a student, and the way that our Sangha is. A year from now, it will be different too. You know, we have a lot more things to go through together, Joa and I, just in the formalities of it all. And then I hope that all of you will be there, and then there's a week of practice that it further matures. And then there's the ceremonies, and then it's something else. So just in terms of my process, it's been going on probably since before I knew Joa, right? You know, where do we say it began? I know that last summer there was an important moment when we were all together at the Dana Sangha retreat, and there was a ceremony for Joa's mother, who had died only a few weeks before that. And Gena Hiroshi asked Joa to be the officiant at that ceremony, which was a huge request, in a sense. You know, ask him to officiate the ceremony in front of, you know, there were probably 70 people, for his mother, who had just recently died. And his mother had known many of these people. And that was a big step for him. He hadn't really officiated much, because we don't really do many ceremonies. And I haven't trained him very well for that. That's one of the things that is lacking in the training, is the ceremonial aspect. So I was nervous. I'm sure he was nervous. I was nervous. How is he going to do? Is he going to remember this? Is he going to know how to do that? And I was standing next to Gena Roshi. And at some point, Joa did something, and it wasn't what you're supposed to do. And I kind of covered my face like this, and Roshi touched me, and she said, drop it. Drop it. Let him go. Let him go. And that was a big moment for me. And I realized that, yes, that wasn't when I decided it was time for the transmission. But that was a big moment for me in my process of the letting go of student. And this happens with all of you throughout your practice. There are moments when I have to say, I have to let you go. Do what you're doing, you know. But that was actually a big relief, that moment when Roshi said to me, drop it, let him go. I don't think she's as indulgent with her own students. You know, she probably needs her teacher standing there saying, drop it, let it go. In any case, she did that for me, and it was liberating for me, actually. I never even mentioned this to Joe, I don't think, because it didn't need to be said, you know. So that's what the process is for me.
Just Barbara, and though she had raised her hand, so, and then we'll have to leave. Barbara, if you want to, it's so appropriate.
Yeah, I have listened to you, and I imagine a beautiful dancing. When we go at a dancing, we not think the end of the dancing and what we do. It's a dancing, and I can imagine Amy, Roche, Amy, and Joe, a dancing. It's a happiness. It's beautiful. And a gift, a miracle, something. It's that. Only this. Just that. So a dancing fluid, a dancing. It's very. Thank you. To Amy and Joa and all of Sanghas.
Thank you, Barbara. And we'll stop on that image of a dance.
Yes.
All right. Have a good afternoon, and see you at 6:00.